Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about our evolution, who we are as spiritually evolving beings. And this time in our history, as a civilization, as the earth itself is changing, so many more people are opening up to new realities. That's why I call the program that, because there's possibilities that are available to us collectively and individually that they weren't available before, it seems like, or maybe just to a few mystics or people who are able to tap into other realities. So tonight's guests are going to talk about those possibilities, those realities. I have Catherine G. Lucas with me, and she's written a book about spiritual emergency. So Catherine, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
Yeah, it was great to meet you, and I felt you had something important to share about what spiritual emergency is. I know Stan Grof has talked about that, but how do you define it?
Well, very similar, really. I mean, I'm building on Stan Grof's work, you know, some 20 or 30 years later, and bringing it, you know, into the consciousness again, just kind of really reminding people at this momentous time. So how I define it is, you know, we're talking about profound psycho-spiritual transformation. We're talking about the process of awakening, which usually for most people is gentle and gradual and manageable. But sometimes it really speeds up and it tips over into crisis. So the spiritual emergence tips over into emergency. And, you know, this is, you know, with the energies really intensifying now as we move towards the winter solstice this year, this is a very important topic, I feel. We really need to raise awareness and understanding about it as much as we possibly can.
Wait, so you say spiritual emergency as opposed to spiritual. I mean, an emergency in that case would be something that happens to somebody where they're totally, these other dimensions are revealed to them and they totally do not know what's happening. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and you know, sometimes people do have a certain amount of awareness of what's happening. I think the bit of the emergency, the crisis bit, is to do with the intensity of the experience. So, you know, it can become really overwhelming and unmanageable, so that a person can't cope on an everyday level with just simple tasks like shopping and cooking and looking after themselves, because their inner process is so profound that, yeah, it becomes intense, overwhelming, all of those things.
Well, I mean, of course, there are people who have always lost touch with reality as well. I mean, I know we're not talking about that, but it looks like that to those people sometimes, and also to people outside. And I think what I get, some of the ways we can tell the difference, is if there hasn't been any kind of mental illness before, if the person has led a pretty normal sort of average or, you know, open life, and then suddenly, boom, they have this other level of consciousness available to them, then there's something else happening, like the spiritual emergence. If there's been a history of mental illness, then I'm not sure. What do you say?
Well, you know, I think that can depend, really. I mean, certainly, you know, the first scenario that you mentioned, that, you know, that is often the case. And certainly, you know, that was my experience when I was 20 and ended up in a psychiatric hospital. You know, I had no previous history, if you like. But, you know, in my book, I tell the story of several women who actually, you know, if we look at it from a mainstream perspective, they might look like classic people with a history of so-called mental illness. You know, so if I give you some examples, you know, there's Kate, who struggled with depression on and off for some 30 years, but she saw it very much as a dark night of the soul rather than accepting that kind of mainstream label, and she really worked through it. Or somebody like Annabelle. You know, Annabelle was actually committed to hospital against her will on three separate occasions, and also forcibly injected with antipsychotic medication. Now these women, you know, what's different about how they have approached their struggles is that they've seen it from a very different perspective. They've seen it through the framework of what we call transpersonal psychology. Now, transpersonal psychology, it's, you know, it's a big branch of psychology. Transpersonal basically means beyond the personal. So we can also say a spiritual psychology, if you like. And transpersonal psychology really brings together ancient spiritual wisdom grounded in modern scientific research. And so what these women have done, and others as well, and I can include myself in that, is, you know, we've basically looked at what we've been going through and kind of seen, kind of said, okay, where's the healing here? Where's the growth? In what ways does my wounded psyche need healing? You know, and this was very much what Grof was talking about as well, you know, back in the 80s. You know, if I look at my own example, you know, I come from quite a wounded family. My father was an alcoholic, so there was certainly room for some healing there. I think what can become very difficult and confusing for mental health professionals and for family and friends is, as you rightly mentioned, it can look like mental health and issues. And in fact, what's happening is that both the mental health issues and the process of spiritual awakening and healing are kind of going hand in hand. So it's almost so just I won't be a sec, just to finish, just to
No,
say that,
but that's a good point. I just want to say, yes, I get what you're
yeah.
saying. Yes.
Yeah. So instead of saying, you know, this is our mental illness, but this is spiritual emergence and emergency, what we're saying is that it can all be in there together. And that's, you know, that's what makes it so complex in terms of trying to work with and trying to support and help people. If we take as the default, okay, that let's support the spiritual emergence and emergency, but let's also, you know, where somebody needs mental health care, you know, let's support that as well, then we won't go far wrong.
So, okay, I mean, that's a good orientation for that because, you know, reality as we know it is not anything fixed. I mean, it appears to be, but what someone who is having a spiritual emergence or emergency are tapping into other realms of their psyche, but also other realms of what reality truly is. And so, you know, it's culturally conditioned, the worlds we live in. And as someone like in your case, perhaps who's had, you know, the outer world wasn't as comfortable as it could have been. There's a retreat into the self. And then, you know, there's no precedent for that. There's no map for our inner worlds. And I think this is what we need to develop. And we need to have a whole model of the human psyche that includes these spiritual dimensions. So,
But yeah,
yes.
very much so, Alan. And in fact, of course, you know, the model of the hero's journey can help us to map these inner territories. And I talk about that. I've got a whole section on that in my book, actually.
Right, because the hero's journey, they must go into the darkness. They must, you know, go into the place of the unknown in order to emerge on a different level of consciousness. That's the only way consciousness can change. So a couple of things then. If that process is sometimes interrupted by drugs and health professionals and people are locked away, that the hero can stay stuck in the dungeon and never emerge from the darkness. Isn't that true?
Well, yes, and that's the tragedy, Alan, that that our mental health system, this is why, I'm so keen to raise awareness and understanding in the mainstream, because of course some people get we call it the revolving door syndrome, actually, where people repeatedly they kind of get sucked into the mental health system and they get admitted to hospital over and over again, and yes, they're not able to kind of to move on and to complete their journey, their hero's journey. And this was, I mean, I can certainly relate to that because that happened to some extent for me. I mentioned I ended up in the psychiatric hospital when I was 20. I spent a month there, and it was a hugely traumatic experience for me. The medication, which was far too strong for, my system was very, very sensitive at that time because of the process of spiritual opening, and the trauma of ending up in hospital. It then took me some 15, 20 years to even be able to come back to my journey and move through it to get a sense of completion. And what I had to do 20 years later was revisit. I had to go back into the darkness in order to be able to move through it. And, that's not great, if that's what we're inflicting on people, rather than understanding, their journeys and supporting them in the right way.
So if you don't mind going back to it a little bit, can you tell us like what was it that got you in those mental health? I mean, what were you seeing? What were you experiencing in your personal reality that didn't make sense or that didn't make sense to people around you? What was that?
Sure. Well, spiritual emergency can really impact on us on so many different levels. So, physically, for example, I didn't sleep for about 3 weeks. And
But wait, what
so,
led up to that? Was there anything leading up? I mean, of course, your father, and was there anything
sure.
specifically leading up to that situation?
Sure, that's a really good question, actually. I mean, in terms of the triggers, I was at an age where I had left home. I was at my first year at university, but still going through, in terms of the sort of development of the psyche, I was still going through very much the process of kind of separating out from the family. That's it's kind of can be a vulnerable time for some young adults. And the specific trigger was that my parents finally split up. And so that, in a sense, I had been carrying a certain amount of, in terms of the family dynamic, I played a role. Once I left home and went to university, that's when the kind of family unit kind of dissolved, if you like. So that's the trigger. But actually, Alan, anything can be the trigger because for some people, it's maybe an accident, even childbirth. I mean, Stanislav Grof's wife, Christina, went into spiritual emergency during childbirth. So, a whole.
But then what happened? What were your symptoms? What were you actually experiencing?
Sure. So I mentioned the fact that I didn't sleep for weeks on end. And sleep deprivation is used by torturers as a way of breaking down the ego. And that's pretty much what's happening in spiritual emergency, really. Our defenses are being broken down in order, if you like, if we need to see it in terms of a disintegration of the psyche for it to then kind of reform and reintegrate in a healthier whole. Okay, but what happens is that people don't trust that process, and so they intervene in ways that are not helpful. So the other things that I experienced, I was very confused between different realities. So, for example, I remember thinking that I could fly. Now, obviously, there is a level at which we can move through time and space, at the soul level and the spirit level. We can fly if you like, but I became so out of touch with my physical body as I moved into the kind of spiritual realm that I was more in touch with that. I basically forgot that my physical body is not capable of flying. I mean, luckily I didn't do myself any harm, but you know, we can see quite easily how some people do. Some people kill themselves by mistake when they're going through spiritual emergency, and this is why it's so important to keep people safe.
Yeah, and that's the other, I think, aspect of this is that when it's to be grounded in the body is to never lose touch with our physicality. Our spirit can evolve, but there's a sense where we have to then live in two worlds, and we need the grounding of what the body brings to consciousness if we are going to integrate. That's just my feeling.
No, precisely, Alan, precisely. And in fact, you know, this is why I then later became a mindfulness trainer, because in 2003 and 2006, I went through two subsequent periods of crisis. And by then, I had learned to meditate, and I had a mindfulness practice. And that helped me enormously with staying grounded enough to be able to kind of stay with the experience and not end up in hospital. And you know, mindfulness is a fantastic tool for really embodying our bodies, you know, for
What do you mean
embodiment.
by mindfulness? I mean, many people have definitions. What is your definition?
Sure. Well, mindfulness, you know, it's an ancient tool that goes back to Buddhist practices, and it's basically a way of being in the present moment. And the way that we come into the present moment is through the body and through the five senses. So as we work with that, it can really help us to kind of connect with our bodies. There's a practice that we use called the body scan, and that is it's a body awareness practice, which, you know, if you work with it on a daily basis over a period of time, it just really strengthens your connection with your body. And yeah, so that's just in a nutshell, really.
Okay, so getting back to you were experiencing sleep and then yeah, I'm just curious about how it unfolded
Sure.
in your process. Yes.
I think, you know, where the learning really came for me, Alan, was, 20 years later, was to be able to compare that first experience, which was so traumatic, with the two subsequent periods that I mentioned, because I was able to see the difference. So I was really able to understand and learn a lot about the process of spiritual emergence and emergency.
Yes, but what
Because,
was so traumatic is the key that I'm trying, that I think would be important to mention. Your personal trauma, if you care to share it.
Well, you know, for me, it was just ending up in a hospital where people were really obviously quite distressed and disturbed and behaving in strange ways. It was terrifying, you know, for somebody of at that age at 20. I'd never seen or witnessed or experienced anything like it in my life. And just the fact that, I guess, you know, I was operating in a different realm of reality. And so, you know, my thinking was very confused, because the mind, you know, as the ego dissolves, the mind desperately tries to understand what's happening. And it can come up with some quite strange and unusual explanations for what's happening. And that can also be very confusing and very frightening. And, you know, when we move into these places, they are very much beyond rational explanation. They're beyond anything that the left brain, the logical brain, can comprehend. I mean, since then, I've learned so much about how the mind works. You know, when I was in crisis in 2003, I watched my fear levels, and I watched how the terror impacted on my thinking. So I was able, with the mindfulness technique of kind of stepping back and being the witness to my emotions and to my mind, I was able to see very clearly the relationship between fear and distorted thinking. You know, what mental health professionals call psychotic type symptoms, I saw how actually it's really very simple, how the fear, you know, what the mind does with that fear, how it distorts our thinking.
But in 2003, then what you think led to that level of awake? Because you were kind of healed in a way from the previous episode.
Well, I don't know that I was healed really, because you know
Oh.
the it was very much interrupted, that
Oh.
first experience. So I wasn't healed. I needed to
Oh,
come
I
back
see.
to it and complete it, if you like. The trigger in 2003 was that I had really deepened my commitment to my spiritual practice. You know, when I was 20, I had no spiritual interest even. I came from a very secular family. I don't think I'd even heard the word spiritual. But by 2003, you know, I was working with a teacher. I was, you know, attending workshops and reading a lot. So really intensifying my spiritual practice. And you know, that was a big difference. An indicator really of how people are going to fare is whether they have some sort of spiritual frame of reference within which to understand what they're going through. And the people who really struggle, you know, and my research, you know, and our experience with the UK Spiritual Crisis Network kind of confirms this really, is the people who don't have a spiritual framework.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's, I think, an important point, especially for this show, is that what we're trying to build, what I'm trying to build, along with many others like yourself, is a new framework for who we are as human beings. And that's not about religion. It's about understanding that we're more than the physical body, that that's the essence of us, ourselves. You know, that's the reframing of the reality that we can look at then our ego structures and personalities and physical structures and aspect of something larger.
Yeah, and that's precisely, you know, that's where the transpersonal psychology comes in, you know, the psychology with the spiritual dimension.
Right. So, I mean, would you say then that most all of these like mental breakdowns that people have are cases of spiritual emergence where their psyche is trying to heal by going into the darkness, by like we're all on the hero's journey? Would you say that?
I would actually, Alan, and you know, certainly if you work from the principle that we're all spiritual beings, then any crisis that we go through, whether it's physical, mental, or whatever, is part. Yes, it's you know, it's a spiritual crisis. It's and in particular, you know, where there are kind of mental health complications, we can talk about psycho-spiritual crisis, and that's you know that's what I'm talking about when you know the title of my book, In Case of Spiritual Emergency. That's what we're talking about.
So, no, talk a little bit more about that then, you know, that
Yeah, well, what I identified, because obviously, you know, what people are most interested in is, you know, if we're going through it ourselves, well, how on earth do we get through? And if we're caring for somebody or supporting somebody, you know, how can we best do that? And if we're working, you know, when I say we're caring for somebody, that might be as family or friends, but it could also be in some sort of professional capacity. So what I've identified is three key phases of moving successfully through a spiritual emergency and if you like, so that it really turning it into an emergence, an experience
yes,
of
tell us
yeah,
that. Yeah,
yeah.
outline it. Yes.
So the three key phases, basically the first key phase is coping with the crisis. And that, you know, that's the most pressing need is just to get through the worst of it and to stay safe. So there I focus very much on looking after mind, body and soul with some very practical things about eating and sleeping and, you know, all of that. I also focus very much on mindfulness and just how powerful and yet simple a tool that is. And we've already talked a little bit about that. So that's the first key phase.
Wait, let me just ask you a question about that. Would you say if someone is shocked by what's happening to them and they're overwhelmed, that's the emergency. If someone is just having visions and opening up to higher levels of mind and consciousness, that's not necessarily an emergency. It's an emergence. So I'm just trying to get the difference there.
Sure. And it comes back to what I was saying earlier, Alan, of the degree of intensity. If somebody is feeling really overwhelmed and that they just can't cope, and often there's a lot of fear as well, then I, you know, we would define that as emergency. But like you say, somebody who's just opening up to other realities, and you know, and there are degrees of it. You know, sometimes, I mean, I remember because I was in the States for a couple of months doing a book tour, and some of the people I met, I would say, you know, they weren't in full-blown crisis, but they were certainly, you know, things had speeded up and had become uncomfortable, and they needed to really look after themselves very carefully to make sure they didn't tip over into full-blown crisis. So there are certainly degrees of it.
Okay. So now the second phase, the first phase is coping with it, maintaining, like, you know, stabilizing oneself.
Yeah.
Second
yeah.
phase. Yes.
So the second key phase is making sense of it all, is integrating the experience. Because once we've got through the worst of it, the likelihood is that we're going to be left with all sorts of questions. You know, why did that happen to me? What on earth was that about? You know, how do I live my life now? You know, because we'll probably need and want to make some maybe quite big changes in our life. So that second key phase of making sense of it all, what I recommend, and this is also what Stanislav Grof recommended, is using a model of the hero's journey. So in my book, I go through in a very practical way, I have journaling exercises for people to work through. And there are 12 stages, if you like, of the hero's journey that we can work through, and that's from the call to adventure, meeting the mentor, crossing the first threshold. There are these various different stages in the hero's journey. And in fact, you know, they're relevant whatever we've been through. The model is so universal that it applies to everybody's experience.
Yes.
So that's
it's a very exciting model, and it's actually the basis of a lot of films about people's lives take us into those levels. So the hero emerges transformed and victorious over the obstacles that they've encountered. But in that second phase, you were saying that, you know, that, they're there. But the thing is, people are different when they, you know, when they have this thing and then they have to deal with it. They have shifted, and so who they are, I mean, I know you say this, is that they're not who they were before they had it. So they are fundamentally different anyway. So I guess it's how do they cope with this restructuring of the personality is also part of that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's coming to terms with the changes. I mean, one of the things that I had to work with was that although I'd been through this extraordinary experience and learned so much, you know, in terms of the spiritual wisdom and insight, what I hadn't quite worked out was how to live that in my daily life. You know, how do I then translate that? How do I integrate it into my daily life? And that's where the, you know, the hero's journey, it certainly helped me enormously. And you mentioned, Alan, you mentioned how a lot of films are based on the hero's journey. In fact, the 12 stages that I use come from the work of Christopher Vogler, who has been... he's been a consultant for Walt Disney and Disney films. He's a screenplay, right? You know, an expert in screenplays, and really has a very, very good understanding of the hero's journey. So I used his work as well as Joseph Campbell, you know, the world-renowned mythologist who brought us the hero's journey, who really made it so much more well-known. You know, I used both of their work in developing that model. So that's the second key phase.
Okay.
And then the final, third key phase of moving successfully through spiritual emergency is going back out into the world. And I mentioned, you know, I touched on that when I referred to the fact that I had to work out, you know, how do I live my life now? You know, how do I integrate what I've learned? And also how, you know, coming to terms with being back in everyday reality, when actually, when we feel that connection with source, you know, it's quite painful to come back to everyday reality. So it's very important that we can understand that the two worlds are in fact one. And you mentioned this yourself earlier, you know, we need to live in both at the same time. And
continue, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's what I was going to say, yeah.
So you work with people one-on-one who are in these sort of crises. I mean, that's your work, right? Would you say?
Yeah, well, I mean, to some extent, not so much. I mean, the work that I have mainly done has been, on the one hand, I set up the UK Spiritual Crisis Network in 2004. And so that is a charitable organization. We have half a dozen directors, and we have a team of volunteers who've been through spiritual emergence and emergency. Many of them are actually professionals, some of them even mental health professionals. And so we're able to offer support by email through that charity. The other work that I've done is teaching mindfulness. And so now I'm teaching mindfulness specifically for spiritual emergency. So I've done some one-to-one work supporting. I've actually just recently started being able to work more internationally and using Skype. So offering Skype sessions to support people. And if anybody listening is interested in that and would like to get in touch with me, then they can do that through my website, which is CatherineGLucas.com. Catherine, right. Spelt with a C.
Yes. Is there a support system in this country, in the U.S.? Do you know?
There is, yeah. There's the Spiritual Emergence Network, which, of course, Stan and Christina Groff set up back in the 80s. I can give you the website for that.
Yes.
So it's spiritualemergence.info. And so just to repeat that, spiritualemergence.info. So that's the American support network. And we've had some very exciting news recently in that they're going to be able to be offering the helpline again soon, because they did that previously and then unfortunately lost their funding for a few years. But that's going to be operating again in the near future. So that's very exciting.
Right. I thought they were around and then they disappeared for a while. So that's why I didn't know if they really were still in existence, you know. So,
yeah. I mean, they kind of had quite a low profile while they weren't able to offer the helpline.
Mm-hmm.
So, I met with them when I was over in the States. I met with the operations manager, a guy called Ted Esser. Yeah.
Are you coming back to the States at all?
I am, Alan. This time next year, I'll be over. And, it'll be great to talk about what we can do.
Well, I'm thinking of putting together a conference about this idea of the difference between, let's say, mental illness and visionary consciousness. And where's the line? And maybe there is no fine line. Maybe it's a merging of that. And maybe you could be a speaker at that conference. I mean, just something.
Yeah, that would be great. And
yes.
Sorry, go on.
No, I'm just working with the Association for Spirituality and Psychotherapy. I'm on the board there. So, but what what were you going to say?
I was just I'm just in terms of coming over. You know, it would be great to do something like that. And I know you're also involved with the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and you're a busy man, Alan.
I know. It is. It's hard to keep track of all these things. But it's all fun. It's all, for me, part of the same thing, which is about it's really for myself. How do I reorder my own consciousness to make who I am available to other levels of reality and also have a firm grounding in the 3D world, you know, I think that's why your work is so important, because there's a dogma among mainstream scientists and psychologists and psychiatrists that there is only this reality, and either you conform to it or you're outside of it, you know, you don't fit in. And you know, the work of R.D. Lang, who was a genius, was so important in opening up what you're talking about. Do you know his work?
Yeah, and I refer to him in my book, actually. I've got a section on him. Yeah, fantastic guy. And unfortunately, much maligned. And Alan, there's another whole dimension that we haven't even begun to touch on, which of course is how this relates, the relationship between what happens at the individual level and what we're now seeing happening at the global level. Because,
Yes,
we,
yes, yes.
yeah,
I was,
yeah,
yes,
yeah.
I was going to talk about that. Yes.
Yeah, because we have entered a period of global spiritual emergency. This is what Irvin Laszlo says, and I quote him. This we've got this incredible, these momentous times. The thing about spiritual emergency is that it offers both dangers and opportunities. And the dangers, I've mentioned the dangers already. People die, they commit suicide. It really can be quite critical. And at the global level too, the dangers, potentially, we're looking at the extinction of the human race potentially. And yet the opportunities are also vast. And so right now, when I see such strong parallels between, what we can learn at the individual level and how we can apply that to the global level. Because, if I think of how transformed individuals are when they go through this process, they shift up to a whole new gear, a whole new level. And there's the healing and the growth and just the spiritual understanding. And of course, that is the opportunity that we're facing globally to shift up to a whole new level of consciousness and awareness. And it can be very scary. We see this at the individual level. It can be absolutely terrifying. And so, the more we can have an awareness and understanding of this process at the individual level, then the more it will help us. If you like, it's forewarned is forearmed. The more prepared we can be to cope with this transition at the global level. So I think this is it's very exciting, and there's, as I say, there's a very strong relationship between the micro personal level and the macro global level.
Right. I think that's such an important point because it also goes into this other way of looking at things, is that we are not separate beings, but all of humanity is part of one greater being, that we're all collectively aspects of something bigger than ourselves. So if the individuals, if the cells are going through something, then also it's coming really from a larger perspective. So what do you think we could do to help bring a smoother transition to our collective consciousness?
Well, and that, that's a big question and a very important question. And, on the one hand, we can certainly do everything we can to support the individuals going through the crisis, because as they come through, then they are able to offer so much collectively. And, the main thing I think, if we're drawing on the work of people like Barbara Marx Hubbard and, Irvin Laszlo, who I mentioned, basically the more we can co-create, the more we can work together, whether that's in cooperatives, whether it's in intentional communities, this is really the way forward is working together, supporting each other.
Right, and I'm going to see Barbara Marx Hubbard in a few weeks, and she is doing an amazing job of talking about the birthing of this collective consciousness. She has a book called Birthing 2012, and she's coming to the New York area June 1st for a special gathering, and then at the Wainwright House on June 3rd. So that's very exciting. This guest who I have lined up after you is also talking about this collective awakening, and maybe I could get him on the line, and then if you're interested, and then we could have a larger conversation about just because I think you've done a great job giving us a sort of a picture of the individual transformation, and of course we're part of a bigger picture, right?
Sure. Yeah, that sounds really good.
Okay, his name is Adam Yellowbird, and he's working with the Kogi Indians. Now, the Kogis are a tribe of Native Americans in South America who were never discovered by the Spanish. They never had any influence by Western culture, and they stayed up in the high mountains, and it was only recently that they sought to make contact. And they knew they had to, because of their collective meditations. They knew the world was in trouble. So through their meditations, they realized that it was time for them to come down from the mountains and talk to the people who are really damaging the world, and see if they could raise up the frequency. So there was a film called The Elder Brothers, who they call themselves, talking to the younger brothers who are destroying the planet. Just before we get to them, just tell people how to reach you, Catherine, and your website and everything we need to know about you.
Sure. So let me just give you the title of the book if people are interested in that. So it's In Case of Spiritual Emergency, Moving Successfully Through Your Awakening. And that's published by Findhorn Press and, available on Amazon, or you can get it directly from Findhorn. And my website is CatherineGLucas.com. And Catherine is spelled CatherineGLucas.com. So that's CatherineGLucas.com.
Great. Doug, are you with us? How many more people can we get on the line? Always nice to. Okay, can you bring in more than that? Okay. Here, I'll give you another number. And so we have Adam Yellowbird. Adam, are you with us? Not yet.
Can you hear me?
Yes, and it's me, and I have Catherine Lucas from the UK, who works in a very related field in spiritual emergence and the kind of transformation that we're going to individually and globally. So who else do you want to bring on the show with you?
I just gave your dispatch man another brother of mine. His name is Wachan from Cusco, Peru.
Okay. And there was someone else, too.
And we also had Maui from – she's residing right now. She's on our team. She's in Florida right at this moment.
Okay. I don't know if we can handle all these, but maybe we could. So – does that sound like fun for you, Catherine?
Yeah, sounds great.
Okay, so Adam, why don't you just give us an overview of, I gave a little bit about the Kogis themselves, but why don't you give us an overview of where they're at now and what they're wanting to communicate to the Western world or to the world in general?
Yes, well, I've been working with the Kogi since 2007. That's when I first met them, on the beaches of Lake Atitlan in Guatemala. And since then, I've made a commitment with the Kogis and Iwako for a 10-year commitment to help get their message out and share the importance of who they are and what they are as a bridge being. And they play a very unique role as the ancestors that haven't left the fires or left their sacredness and way of life. They've never left the heart of the world until just recently. And they're calling this time from Mamakusha out of Mamarua, outside of Namasimaki, Colombia, the dawn of the new time. And so we've been working with them of traveling to different parts of the world and bringing their messages and transmissions about how to restore thyself and to bring that balance into Mother Earth and balance into ourselves.
Okay. Who's the guy in Peru, Lachan? What's his connection to all this?
Yeah, Lachan.
Yeah.
He's here. He's on with us.
Well, do you want to introduce him so we know what he does and how he fits in with this?
Yes, he's right here. Go ahead, Lachan.
Hi, it's a pleasure for me to
to be with you guys today, and I just want to share my insights about the mammals. You know, I come from the Inca lineage myself, and so we are relatives, and what I know and I feel that there are elder brothers, you know, they are keeping, their work is to keep this balance in our Mother Earth, as we call Pachamama. So these brothers are helping us to understand the power of Mother Earth, because Mother Earth is a living cell in the universe. So they are keeping the balance with Mother Earth, with their prayers, every day of their lives. And I believe that this is something we need in these days, to understand that Mother Earth is not an object. Mother Earth is a living being, and she has feelings, and she can feel our love. So this is the time to give our love, to connect with Mother Earth. And I believe that's the message of our elder brothers, the Kogis.
But what can we do practically? What is the, you know, what can everyone do listening to this program to help make that happen?
I believe the best thing we can do is you know, to help, to support while the mammals are here, you know, in order to give them a good shelter, good food, you know, and people to assist to the all the events that they are going to do. I believe that would be the best support. And if you cannot do that, you know, prayers are always, you know, a good energy, you know, to send them, you know, so their journey to this part of the world is safe and good.
Right, because the mamos are the leaders, are like the head shamans of the Kogis and the Owako. So let me ask, Catherine, this is kind of new to you. Do you have anything that you want to add or ask about this? Because you're coming from a kind of global consciousness perspective.
No, I just think it's great to, you know, to hear the brothers, you know, speaking and, you know, that they have this opportunity to have an international platform, because, you know, this fact of Mother Earth being a living being and, you know, us sending our love to her and that she has feelings, this is so important. And, you know, I mean, I like to think that actually because of the environmental movement, you know, since the times when we landed on the moon and actually saw the Earth in pictures for the first time, I like to think that we are gradually becoming more aware of this. But obviously we need to speed up and raise awareness much more widely.
Yeah, maybe Adam, you can answer why the Momos, the head of the Kogi and the Owako, feel like this time is so important right now. Is it just the Mayan calendar idea? What's happening to us as a planet, as a consciousness?
We have great sickness and disease and disharmony. They came out in the 80s from the heart of the world. There was actually a movie, first movie, that came out, and they could see this from where they live, the heart of the world, from the tops of the mountains. And they receive all the information, the transmissions from the stones, the waters, the rivers, the fires, the elements. And They foresaw what was coming, the mining, the disruption, the imbalance, government, everything that's happening right now. So they said, okay, our younger brothers, we're willing to come out to share with you some of the teachings, very basic but very deep, and to get the trains of thoughts to help clear our minds, bodies, spirits, and clear the land to be the bridge from their world to our world, the Western world, and to give us, you know, hope and faith and understanding that we can restore this and bring it back. We do. They believe, the ones that I'm working with right now, there's certain things that we can do. And I want to share this, very important. I just came from there last month. In this time, we have the opportunity to gather these sacred objects, artifacts, sacred pieces that were that were taken from burial sites. They were taken from sacred sites, taken from the waterways, certain foundational pillars that were created by the ancestors, also by the Kogi and Iwako. A lot have been removed, along with the crystals and gold and different properties, minerals, specifically to return back specific pieces and that are stored around in people's homes at the grandparents' house and a lot in the museums. That they said the first step that we could do in this time was gather and bring those to the specific bridge being to get them to the appropriate authorities, and they'd be willing to help guide us through this, begin taking those back to those regions, and it'll help rebalance. I saw this with my own eyes a month and a half ago in the process, and how it restores the environment and how it can rebalance the nature around. And it's begun. Without resistance and occupying Wall Street, that all has its purpose. But their purpose is to hold this purity of place, not resist and fight, to move with the flow of nature. They say this is all total bien, the process and understanding. And to gather these pieces now over the next few weeks and months to come, and return it. And so they're in process right now of doing this. All the artifacts will begin speaking from the Vatican and other places that they're held in museums. They'll be speaking to those custodians, authorities that will be holding, and they will begin returning to the Hopi, to the Lakota, to the people, the Inca people, and many nations. They will naturally, this is the cycle that's moving now. And that this is the dawn of the new time to rebuild a stronger foundation for all of us.
Because those objects are sacred, and they reset the balance of the planetary grid, is what I get.
Yes, from the ley lines and the grids and the waterways, the rivers, the mountaintops, they'll help the snow peaks. They showed me some things that they, with my own eyes, how they restored rivers from complete desolate regions, and I wouldn't be telling you this unless they allow me to do this, and I know it could be going a little bit out doing this, but they wanted us to know there is hope and faith for the contamination in the airs, waters, fires, elements, and this is one of the reasons they're coming. There'll be the seen and the unseen, unspoken, spoken and unspoken, that's going to take place here. They'll speak about a lot and try to give that through their language to Spanish to English. But the transmissions that will be set to the thought patterns that they'll be carrying will help us be able to receive this information. And that's just the nutshell of what it is. So please, over in Europe, they can help guide you, and there'll be specific people helping in this process to help get an understanding. Now, these artifacts are the clay. One example, the clay pot that have paintings and designs, archetypes on them. They look at these as beings no different than as we are of the earth. And they're beings that were placed to hold this space. And so that's what they're talking about, is that these are spiritual beings and have purpose. And they never lost that connection. And so it's a really exciting, that is a piece. But how do you restore the oceans? How do you restore the air, the fire, the land? It's just about becoming back in harmony with nature. It's not against resisting or fighting for or fighting amongst leadership roles or governing roles. It's an acceptance and embracing one another in this process and recognizing one another, as we were doing here, brothers sitting this morning, recognizing, sharing our dialogue, processing, and saying, yes, we can do it. This is where we stand, and let's be united in this. And the thought, mind, body, and spirit.
Well, I think that's why we're all here now. We're all on this conference call, broadcasting this out to the world, is to make people aware of this. Do you have any comments, Catherine?
No, I'm just really pleased to hear. You know, this is obviously very important work, and it's very encouraging. You know, and I wonder, you know, where artifacts are being held. In museums like, for example, the Vatican, you know, I would really like to think that they are open to returning items to where they belong, and like Tom was saying, you know, these aren't actually items. There's, you know, there's this real very powerful spiritual energy in these artifacts. So you know, let's hope and pray that that they get the response they need.
Mm-hmm.
It's begun. We've already begun, and the response will come first with you, your relatives, your family, grandma, grandpa. Even in my own community over here in Sedona, just since I returned, people have been coming naturally to me, showing me these artifacts that are sitting there. They have no idea what it is in relations. I said, bring these to the mamas. They'll direct you. They can understand. So it's happening, and they will. It's a movement. We're sort of ahead of time, and you're going to see, and naturally, they will be released from these museums. It's not something we have to write big petitions or do a lot of. In the nature of this process and the time we're moving towards, in December 21st and beyond, 2013 and on, or to 2020 and beyond that, this is a natural cycle, and it's going to naturally occur, and they will return. It is happening right now. We've been documenting this process right now. So have courage.
Yeah, no, it's great, and I'm so happy you're out there doing this. Why don't you tell us what when are they coming, the Kogis, and how people can help out, and what's the whole story about this upcoming trip they're making to the U.S.?
June 22nd, 23rd, 24th in Sedona, Arizona. They will be coming to bring their messages on hope and inspiration, talking about some of the things I just shared with you. It is a very rare occasion that they'll be able to come. There's not a lot of passports and visas issued to be able to make this. And it's also... this is happening because certain individuals are taking those steps to be able to do those works and make those commitments and payments. That's what they want us to understand, too, is part we have to make payments to Pachamama or to Mother Earth to see this through. So they're going to have an inter-exchange also with our relatives from like Wachan here and others from South America, other tribes, invited local Hopis to be here, Havasupai, and local indigenous people, and people from around the country have been calling in that they would like to meet with them. Also, we're going to do a global, if you cannot attend the conference, we're going to have a global, visual of this. Yeah, at the 22nd, 23rd, 24th. Where people can light a candle, they can do their meditation and prayer, their ceremonials, to tune in through the frequencies, vibrations, the ley lines, and the grids, however cultural background you have, to be attuned. And we'll have it on indigenousnativeamericans.com. That'll be one of the portals. You can write in, blog in, send it through the Facebook, indigenousnativeamericans.com. Tell us about your event. And we encourage you to set up a day event, 1-hour event, 3-day event there, so people that could not make it here can attend to your event, whether it's in Europe or Idaho or South Africa. And we'll upload those on the internet, and this will be the web of being able to be in tuned and to be able to perceive these transmissions. And so
that's great. That's really exciting. And if people want to donate to the Kogis, where should they do that?
They can, we have certain charitables on board, and they can go through indigenousnativeamericans.com and give us an email, shoot us an email at ICSAWAZ@gmail.com. All that information, there's also a donate button there. We are needing quite amount of funding to see this through. They already told us, and they mentioned to me, you do your job, you take your place, and everything else, the monies will come. It is the people helping the people that make this possible. Some people we're also getting, you know, through the registration that helps, but we do encourage you, even if it's $1, seek and call, you know, find that inner place into your heart. And if you can help, that's going to help take care of the mammals and their travels and expenditures. Please also pray today. They're en route now from the mountains, doing the ceremonies and preparations right here, right now, today, working with the Iowacos and Kogis down on the ground in Colombia. So those funds will help them continue the process, getting all their paperwork, documents, meetings that need to be prepared, their food. This isn't just this event. We are continuing over the next several years to work with them, to feeding the communities, help educate their children. And we also have opened the International Center of Spiritual and Ancestral Wisdom here in Arizona, the hub, so that we can help continue our efforts in helping the Kogi and Iowaco and other indigenous people throughout the Americas. So there's many ways, and, you know, I encourage you to go to the website, check out the website, link in, put in your blogs, you know, become interactive and send us an email if you're interested. And we also, again, we could forward you to those stats right off. And then people could send giftings through the mail. We have a P.O. box. You could also do it that way. And
what's the P.O. box?
Yeah, we have a P.O. box 1502, Cornville, Arizona, 86325. And that information is also on contact info on indigenousnativeamericans.com. You can check out that website. And spread the word through these radio shows, social media. It's a very important time to unite, to put aside our differences, and smile and recognize one another. You know, we've all gone through our trials and tribulations, and this is a great gift that's been given to us, and I think it's even a greater gift to have them here in the United States with us.
The importance I feel of the Kogis is that they've maintained a level of consciousness, a level of physical, spiritual connection for thousands of thousands of years. They've been in touch with these higher realities. That's what I was talking about with Catherine Lucas before. And they've never lost their touch with nature, with the idea that their spirit and that this physical earth is a reality.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I've been blessed to be in there with these guys, and the thought that they work telepathically a lot, and I don't speak their language first off, and I barely speak Spanish. I'm still learning more. And it's like you get into the zone. When you enter into their place where they've been for thousands of years, there's a knowing. They call it the Aluna. The sacredness, and there's a knowing that takes place beyond these words. Yes, you're right, Alan. They haven't lost that. Now they are getting encroached by the Western world. This is coming higher and higher up to the mountain. And at this time, something too, the world governments, as we've seen in the movie, too, are looking as an avatar scenario happening down on the ground there. There is richness in the waters, the lands, the diamonds, the minerals. This is a reality for them, and that's another reason they're coming out and saying, look, we're still here. We've been here since the last cycle. We're here now, and we're going to be here after this cycle.
Right. I think they're coming out because this is a time where the planet needs to realize its global oneness, that we are one being, like you said, the earth is a living creature, and we are like the cells of the earth. We are an aspect of that. So either we get it now or we don't, but this is really, I think, what the Mayans, the Toltecs, at the end of this cycle saw, that we either, you know, evolve like to a higher system of order, or it collapses completely. And this is why this time is so important, and I appreciate their push to make a difference in this world. So
it's not the end either. I will continue to help them, whatever it means for them. Them coming here is just the first step. That's what they've been telling me. This isn't the end, and in their dialogue and process, this is the first step in our commitment. So
We could talk to Lushan a little bit, and yes. I know you've spent time with him, but also I'm interested in what Lushan's personal experience with these people are like. Like, what's it feel like, Lushan, to be in their company, to be in the presence of these beings, people?
Well, when you are together with them, I have the feeling that they help you to remember your real essence, which is love and light. And you know, the biggest knowledge is love. And the universal language is love. And they have that connection, you know, with Pachamama, with Mother Earth. And something that we need to understand is that Mother Earth can restore herself from any kind of wounds, from any kind of destruction that humans are doing. So the end of humanity, it doesn't mean the end of the world. Because our Mother Earth will keep living forever.
Right.
So while we are here in this dimension, we need to learn to live with love and respect with Mother Earth and all living creatures. So that's basically the teaching of all ancient cultures. And the Mamos are here to remember us, because that's our true essence. Our true essence is love, not destruction. So we need to create peace in our hearts, and that peace will reflect to all over around the world.
And that's how they live? I'm just interested in their communities, in their villages. What is that, the feeling you get with the interactions among the people?
Well, that's how they live. That's their daily life. Their life is a constant prayer. And they are connected, deeply connected with the coca leaves. The coca leaves, for our ancient people, they are like the elixir of life. Sadly, nowadays, the people are misusing. They are misusing the power. So when you don't know how to use the power of Mother Nature, it will destroy you. Uh-huh. So they are constantly commuting every day, chewing the sacred coca leaves in their poporos, and that's the way how they connect with the all. And I'm very sure that they are going to also remember us to have respect with the sacred elements here on Earth. So the same thing is happening with the tobacco and so on, so many powerful elements. So it's time for us to really pay attention to it and to respect the power of nature.
And what's the relationship between the men and women in the societies of these people?
You know, our ancient cultures, they were matriarchal cultures. You know, everything, because the woman represents Mother Earth because they are fertility. So before the conquistadores came to our land, our relationship with the woman was all that respect that they deserve, because Pachamama is feminine. And so the woman represent that sacredness of the divine feminine. So that's the connection of our ancient ones. They do respect and appreciate the female energy.
So the woman is honored within the cultures of the Kogi and the Awaka.
Completely.
Uh-huh. Catherine, do you have any comments?
No, I'm just fascinated, really. And you know, Alan, we were talking about, you know, this time of spiritual emergence and emergency, and it's, yeah, I mean, this is it, you know, this is the awakening. This is it happening.
Yeah, I mean, this is, and
something
so people.
I'd like to also say,
yes,
is that, you know, after the conquistadores came, you know, religion and some groups of people, they have been oppressing women for centuries, you know, and also that they've been taking women away from sacred ceremonies just in order to control some power. But the real essence, what they teach our ancient ones, is that we all come from a feminine. We all are born from a woman. So we need to pay our love and respect to the feminine energy. And right now, the big reawakening is coming because women around the world is gaining their power again. And that's part of the prophecies. So the return of the ancestors is within us. And also, as my brother Yellow Bird said, that the return of the ancestors is when all these sacred objects are going to come back home. And because our people, they know exactly how to use it. But right now, all our sacred objects are in hands of collectors or museums of people who really don't know how to use them.
Right. They're not even being used. They're just being, isolated and kept from their true power, which is to be in the elements and in ceremonies and rituals. I mean, they're not something that's pretty to be looked at. That's the materialistic way of using something. But their energies are so much bigger than what they appear to be. And I think this is, if this is the first phase that they want us to do, then I'm sure they are tuned into something that that they're trying to tell us in more than one level of reality. You know, there's other things at work here that most people aren't aware of on a multidimensional level, which is what I get the sense of where they live. They don't live just in this reality. They live on many realities at once, and that's what I feel the work that I'm doing and other people are opening up the public to this awareness. And that's why I feel the work of the Kogis, the Awaka, you know, what my guests here, Catherine, Lucas, what you guys are all doing, we're all talking about in a way the same thing from many different angles, that the human being is so much bigger than we've been conditioned and brainwashed to think we are. And because of that, the earth is suffering, and we need to restore who we are and the earth. That's what I get. So thank you. Any comments, Adam Yellowbird, any final words?
I just want to acknowledge you too, Alan, and being the inspiration that you are in the heart of New York City and all the projects, all the people that you're touching, all the people that this show will touch. So just, you know, I ask here the Holy Ones to give you all the blessings, courage, and strength and the backing that you need to be able to continue your work. And I want to just give so much gratitude and thanks that you allowed us, myself and Wachan and others that are listening and our new relative over there in the UK, this opportunity to bridge these worlds and new realities and understanding. So from the bottom of my heart, from outside of Sedona, Arizona, and a small little town called Cottonwood and by the sacred fires here, I'm just so grateful for all of you out there that are ready to awaken and take hands together, and let's walk together to help our elder brothers in this instance and help one another through this dawn of the new time.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for your blessings here, and I appreciate it. And once again, can you just give people all the dates and the websites and everything that they want, if they want to make contact with what's going on the 22nd, how to do that?
Yes, this June 2012, June 22nd, 23rd, 24th in Sedona, Arizona, the Kogis and Iowakos will be taking a long journey pilgrimage from the heart of the world to be here with all of you. And again, if you cannot attend, those that cannot attend, there'll be a global connection. We encourage you to do ceremonies from your homes, individually or collectively in a family setting, and tie in to the website that we're going under, indigenousnativeamericans.com. We do have a blog there, Enoch Blog. Feel free to write every day We'll have a forum there for you to also write in of your events. We'll plug that in every day that you're doing, so people that can attend your events globally. And if you would like to make donations, please give us an email at icsawaz@gmail.com. All that information is on the contact info of Indigenous Native Americans. Also, this is sponsored. This gathering, the Dawn of the New Time in Arizona, is sponsored by the International Center of Spiritual and Ancestral Wisdom. And in any ways and forms that you would like to donate and support daily, monthly, or annually to this center, they'd be greatly appreciative so that they continue to help support the Kogis, Iwakos, and other indigenous peoples like Wachan and their projects and their sharing of their culture. So again, I want to give thanks. And without further ado, this is a blessed day. Welcome to the equinox. Yesterday, we're in powerful time.
Right, that was the eclipse of the sun and the moon. But so, thank you. That was Adam Yellowbird. LaShawn, do you want to tell people what you're up to and how to contact you?
Yes. If they want to contact me, I have an email address. That's Wilkasara, WILLKASARA@yahoo.com. And I also want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to reach to all our relatives and to share the insight of our ancient ones, because we believe that it's very important in this time of life, because we know that our ancient ones are the ones who are still keeping alive the wisdom and knowledge that somehow we have lost, you know, with the modernity of life. So they are also going to share with us to go back to the basics, go back to the simplicity, to be one with you all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's LaShawn, whose major work is to keep alive ancient wisdom and to preserve culture and help us stay connected to who we really are as human beings. And I also have online Catherine G. Lucas. Catherine, you want to just tell people again your information, your website, any final comments from you?
Yeah, Alan, thank you so much. And I would just like to echo the others. You know, thank you, for your wonderful work. So my website is CatherineGLucas.com. And I also earlier gave the website for the American Network for Supporting People Going Through Spiritual Emergency. So let me just give you that again. It's spiritualemergence.info, spiritualemergence.info. Right. And my book is In Case of Spiritual Emergency, published by Findhorn Press.
Thank you, Catherine. And that's sort of why I brought all you guys together at once, because the individual spiritual emergence is what we said before, matching the planetary spiritual emergence, and the Kogis and the Iwako are sort of the mentors for guiding this planetary spiritual emergence that we're going through. So that's why I really feel the work of Adam Yellowbird and others in Sedona area and bringing the Kogi and the Iwako to the States at this time is about a spiritual emergency that we obviously are going through right here at this time. So thank you all for being a part of this program, New Realities, and spreading the message of our spiritual emergence. This is Alan Steinfeld. I also want to thank Viratu from AshevilleMagazine.com being one of the sponsors of the show, and all the other people who have been very supportive in making New Realities possible. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com. You can also email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.
Waking up in the middle of my life. nothing's what it seems. Feel the fire come alive. Feel the fire
in the fire.
Come